Hey everybody, Mike Ling, Grateful Alcoholic. Am I muted? Carl, you mute me again?
You're good.
No, you're good.
Okay. You asked me to talk, so if you're going to mute me, let me know at least. Grateful to be sober, and I don't know if there are anybody in their first 30 days, but if you're new, welcome. If you feel new, welcome. And happy birthday, Melanie. Did I say my name? That's good. This traveling really throws me off the time zones and stuff. I've been sober since June 30th, 1982, by God's grace. And this fellowship, relapse is not mandatory. I have a sponsor who came tonight to keep me honest, Barbara C., and I have a home group, the Sunday Morning Paper. If you're ever in Escondido, don't come because it's closed, but I will send you the Zoom information and you're always welcome. I'm pretty excited and thank you, Carl, for asking me. When somebody asks me that's heard me before, I always think that's really good news, right? And I've been very reflective. The women I sponsor coordinated a big birthday gala via Zoom on Tuesday night. My sponsor presented me with a token for 38 years. And I'm telling you, it's a long way from there to here. A long, long way. I was young and I was perky when I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I really was hoping for was a date. I wanted a boyfriend to be in AA with me so we could find God and go to AA dances, you know, the basics here. And I was never planning on becoming an alcoholic or joining AA, but I have a progressive disease of alcoholism. And if you have it, hold on, because it's going to take you someplace you don't plan on going. That's what powerless looked like for me. I was raised in Phoenix, born in Houston, Texas, and I'm telling you, I was a good Catholic school kid at St. Agnes, and I have my first Holy Communion picture up. I was really into it. I'm not a recovering Catholic. I didn't have any bad experiences. I was just weird, and I knew I was bodily and mentally different without being able to articulate that at five. I just was born off. And I think Jesus, Mary, and Joseph could have raised me, or the Charles Manson family. I actually don't think it would have mattered. I'm off. I hear things wrong. I see things wrong. I perceive things wrong. And it doesn't matter what they did or didn't do. It wouldn't have been good enough anyway. I'm just, you know, I was restless, irritable, and discontented in kindergarten. I like the nuns. I like the structure of Catholic school. I like rosaries and statues and candles. I love Latin. I mean, who loves Latin? I did. I took Latin. Nobody takes Latin, but I was totally into it. And in my generation, and I just turned 70 the day before I turned 38. So one of those days is like, holy crap. And then the next day is, oh my God. So they're back-to-back days. So I'm just saying that. But I really, if you don't quite blend and you know it, it's a horrible feeling. And in my generation, if you were that way and you went to Catholic school, you were going to become a nun. And so that's what I decided to do. I was going to join our order, which was the Blessed Virgin Mary BVMs. I like their outfits. I like the ambiance of the convent. And if you misbehave when you went to Catholic school in those days, what they did was they'd make you work at the convent for an hour on Saturday. And I was there most Saturdays all day, just because I think things are funny that other people don't necessarily think are funny, like Monsignor. Never thought I was that funny. So I spent a lot of Saturdays there, and I just kind of liked it. I felt safe, and I felt comfortable. And I had my first drink, and the next day I couldn't be a nun. And so I became a go-go dancer. Basically, that's what happened. That's what I was like. I'm flexible, and I've always got a great idea. It's coming down the pike and it'll come to me. It's intuitive thinking. It's never good thinking, but it's intuitive. And I was just so excited because I thought, well, I'll be a go-go dancer then. And I was not cut out for that either. And at 15, I decided to do a Donna Reed impersonation. I should hold up the TV guide that Corrine just sent me for my birthday. It's Donna Reed, 1959. She Takes My Breath Away. And for those people like Puente House, look her up on Google. She's an amazing woman. And she's very, very cool. And she's the mom of the week. And I decided at 15 to come to California, get a sailor, get a puppy, make a meatloaf, have a baby, just do what traditional adults might do if they were older. And that's really kind of what I did. Now I have a meatloaf club from here to the East Coast in Iowa. Lest I digress. Anyway, this is what I was like. I'm better now. So if you're questioning anything, don't, because this is better. I was not authentic. And I need to say this right now because it just came to me. I almost drank at 6.5 years sober. And the reason I almost drank with commitment to Alcoholics Anonymous galore was because I was struggling a little bit and I didn't want to tell anybody. And I thought I didn't want my sponsor to feel bad. So I didn't mention it to her because she'd realize she probably sucked. You know, why would I be doing bad? I'm doing everything. So I'm not going to tell her. I don't want to tell anybody I'm sponsoring. I don't want to tell them at H&I that I'm struggling. So I decided to handle it. Because I have taken the steps. I did believe in the traditions. I do keep my service commitments. There's no reason I should struggle, was what I was thinking. And what it did was almost cost me my sobriety. Because I realized the next morning after I came an inch away from drinking was that I didn't want to look bad in Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, I'm here to tell you, I've looked bad sometimes in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I've always looked sober. And I learned that, and it's important because I was not a legitimate, authentic person before I got here. I was a pretend person. And I suffered from self-delusion that I actually thought was true. And I had a lot of kids, and I worked in the right emergency room, and I served on the right committee. I did authentic, legitimate things, which gave me the impression I was a real person. I wasn't a real person. I knew that. I was always afraid somebody was going to find out. And that's really how I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I almost drank myself to death because I didn't even know I had alcoholism. I just couldn't not drink. And it progressed. It went from this to this. And it does it without your permission, your full participation. But without your permission, nobody would go where I went on purpose. Powerless. I was so powerless that no matter what commitment I made, they have a whole chapter about it, I couldn't not drink. I had to drink at work. I'd been promoted on a reputation I'd had 10 years before. And so what happened to me was on June 29th, 1982, that's a regular birthday. We also did Walton's themes at my house. I was the only divorced woman in La Mesa, which I knew that was true. I was the only failure, the one who wanted it the most. I was drinking myself to death. I was drinking at work. I couldn't wait till 5 anymore. I hadn't opened mail in 3 months. I came up with this another intuitive thought. Was if you're not going to pay it, why open it and bum yourself out? It's depressing, you know, to know what you're not going to pay. And it's stressful. So I decided to avoid stress while I was drinking. And I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it one more second. And I promised the kids I wouldn't drink because they were doing a Waltons theme. We were doing Into the Waltons at that time. And they sing They bring you breakfast in bed and they sing the happy birthday song, and you don't have chores on Walton's Mountain on your birthday. So we didn't have chores. And I'm have acute alcohol poisoning, so I can't eat because food makes me sick. I can't handle the weight of it. And I promised the kids I wouldn't drink, and I meant it with everything in my being. And I can only go 2 hours without a drink. I can't make it 2.5 hours. I can't make it 2 hours and 10 minutes. 2 hours was a stretch. And in 2 hours, I was drinking. And when I came out of a blackout in the middle of the night, and I didn't know where I was, I didn't know where my kids were, that had never happened. And that's when I did the prayer. And the prayer goes something like, I don't even know if you're there, but if you are, please do something, because I didn't know what to do. I didn't even know what was wrong with me. And it was, you know, God feels sorry for us and will do for us what we can't do for ourselves every single time. He has never done for me what I could do for myself, even when I try to trick him and say, I don't think I can do, I need you. No. But if you can't do it and you don't know what to do, that's when God will kick in. And a lady, next thing I know, I'm calling AA on June 30th, 1982. And the next thing I know, I'm being 12-step, and I didn't know what that was, by a lady named Flo. And she asked me how I was doing, and I told her the truth. Nobody knew the truth. I didn't even know the truth, but the truth came out, and it was bad. And she said, I'm going to take you to be an AA, and it's going to be okay. I said, okay. And she says, you have to promise me you'll call me before you drink. I said, no, I'm not going to drink. I'm just going to be an AA. And I meant it for 2 hours. And then I thought, you could drink here. They want you to call first. I didn't know they were going to talk you out of it. She said, you know, call me before you drink. I thought, I guess they know you're going to drink, but they want you to call first to check in. So I don't know. So I call her to let her know I'm going to drink, but not very much, so I can be an AA. And they talk you out of it. And you'll be sober 38 years before you end up, you know, catching on. And so she said I called every hour. My memory was every couple of hours. And I was only detoxing, so she could be right, but it was a long day. And I don't know if you've ever still had booze and joining AA and done drinking, but can't really not drink. And you don't have a host of friends around you. And you don't have, I mean, I had nothing going for me. And so I had to keep calling her. And then I was going to put down my foot, because it's cult-like here, and they're just after you. And once you say you'll go, then they think you mean it, and then they don't want you to. I mean, it was exhausting being sober all day. I mean, it's just wore me out. So I'm going to call her. I'm going to drink. I'm going to put my foot down and be very clear that I am drinking, not much, so I can be an AA. I mean, I didn't think she was grasping what I was saying, because she didn't seem to get it. And I had gone as long as I could, like 7 or 8 hours. I mean, it's forever. And what I said to her was, if you don't hurry and get here, I won't be able to stay sober. And that was before cell phones. And she was there in like 5 minutes. I mean, she knew what was coming. I didn't even know it was coming. I think I really thought once you said you'd be an AA, you wouldn't want to drink again, but it wasn't my story. I couldn't go that long without a drink. And if something happened the minute she walked through my front door and I just exhaled and I knew I could do it. You know, where two or more are gathered, we can do this. I could not do this. I can't do this today without you. I have no illusions that I still have the progressive disease of alcoholism. Without a drink, I have that. And she took me to my first meeting. I thought your big book was called the Blue Book. I thought, oh, am I supposed to have a blue book? And, you know, and then you have to say your name and you're an alcoholic. And some guy had 30 days and said it. So I thought you had to say how long, and I had 11 hours. And they're long hours. And when I said that, it's like a golf score, right, Carl? The lower, the better. They went nuts. They were clapping for the guy with 30 days. They were out of control over my 11 hours. And I don't know about anybody else. Nobody else was clapping for me. Nobody else was proud of me. Nobody else understood how long 11 hours is without a drink, but they did. They got it. And I joined, basically, is what happened. I'm not leaving these people. They totally put their arms around me and just kept me safe. And I wanted to stay in meetings 24/7. And I went into my job and I didn't even have a real resume. I had a fake resume till I was 7 years sober. If I had walked by a campus, I said I was a poli-sci major. It was a good resume, I might add. It wasn't accurate, but it was a good one. And I'd worked in a really great hospital. I'd worked in an emergency. I mean, I'd really done a lot of good things. I'm not stupid, but I was a liar, actually. I call it different things. My sponsor gets all, you know, semantic. She wants me to tell the truth, but it was a fake resume. And I'm sitting there at this desk and I'm not drinking. I have no gin and tonic in my drawer. I'm not going to be able to stay there all day. I'm freaking out. You know, I'm like 10 days sober. I don't know what it was. And I went in and told the director, I said, I have to leave now. She goes, okay, what's going on? I said, I'm an alcoholic and I'm in AA now and I won't be able to be here. I'm in AA now. And she thought I was taking the rest of the day off initially. And I said, no, I'm not going to be able to work and be in AA. It's just too much. I'm going to be a coffee maker before you know it. And once I have 30 days, I can be in charge of the trash. And 90 days, she can be a ticket girl at Saturday Night Speaker. I mean, I'm trying to help her grasp where I am, why I cannot fulfill my professional responsibility. I said, I'm not even qualified for this job. I don't know how I've been working. She didn't stop me from leaving, needless to say. And I went home and the kids went, you know, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm in AA now. I don't drink anymore. I know you guys don't completely get it, but this is big. I'm going to be in AA. I'm not going to be able to work. And I didn't even realize where all these kids came from. I thought, Jesus, they're everywhere, you know, and they want things like food or something. I don't know what they wanted. It's like coming out of a blackout. You just look around at your life. I think, I don't even know how I got here. I really didn't get it. And they went, we're going to go to Dad's, who was sober for that 1 year. And I said, you know, it should be about 12 weeks because, you know, they have 12 things they want you to do. It's not rocket. It's not like EST or anything. It's just 12 things they want you to do. I'll knock out one a week. And it was summer. They went over to Coronado. And then the mail problem happened. And part of the mail involved the house. Part of the mail involved our things. Part of the mail involved. None of it was good news. No wonder I didn't open it. But they'll take your stuff if you're not going to open your mail and pay your bills. I don't know what I thought was going to happen to it, but it stressed me out. I thought, why be depressed over bills you're not going to pay? Even if I had money, I didn't want to pay them. And the next thing you know, I'm living in Pat Webster's front yard in a 14-foot camping trailer with red shag carpeting. Not one of my colors. And I'm not a camper, just so you know. A cabin with no bathtub, that's camping to me. A 14-foot, it's a round metal thing. It's not even like a mobile home. It's nothing. And it's in somebody's front yard with a hose. I had no phone, no TV, no radio, just this. And Alan brought me a bicycle, a Boy Schwinn paperboy bike, where, you know, that was instead of the car. And that's kind of when I learned, because my sponsor would say things like, what a gift. No matter what you need, God provides it. I thought, Are you looking at my life here? I'm riding a bicycle. I can't function. I'm drooling in meetings while feeling superior. My biggest claim to fame, because where I got sober, if you were a whiner, they gave you service commitments. And I had about 8 million. So I'd like to warn all the new people. Nobody warned me. I'd like to warn you. If an old timer asks you how you're doing, just say good. Grateful as can be. Made a gratitude list. You're on it. I love AA. I love God. I love steps and traditions. Mention the concepts. They'll leave you alone. I thought they wanted to know how I was doing, so I told them. Next thing you know, I'm on 20 H&I panels a month. I mean, I had like 3 a week. It was crazy. I'm a coffee cup girl. I'm a trash girl. I'm a ticket girl. I was young. So I learned. How you doing? I'm good. Good and grateful. Just as grateful as I've ever been. I'm just so grateful. But I had a million commitments. I couldn't function to work. I could only be an AA. And there was an old timer named Jack Ladd says, I'm going to get you. I'll take care of that. I said, well, I can't work. I'm in healthcare. He goes, you're in a camping trailer. And the next thing you know, I'm selling plasma, which I did think was a good deal. But I told them I was doing a thesis on the homeless. And that's why I was selling plasma. That's why I came 4 times a week when you could only go twice, or I don't know what their thing was, but I had plenty of plasma and I needed cash. And that's what I was like a freak show. And, you know, people weren't even taking bets on me. They thought I was so desperate and pathetic that I would probably stay sober. And I kept my commitments. I knew how to do that somehow. And the kids eventually are coming home. Not before I had to do the step stuff. And I'm telling you, I rode my bicycle to Taco Leo's one night with the roll of dimes my sponsor had given me. And to tell her. And if you're going to call your sponsor and tell them a sad story, you have to kind of work it in such a way that she doesn't think you're feeling sorry for yourself or that you're not grateful. So trying to get all that in when you're dying here, it's not that easy. So I'm trying to explain to her I'm lonely. I need a boyfriend and to be with me, to be an AA with me. And she said, go back and ask God to hold you tonight. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to jump all over that one after I get a boyfriend. I mean, I'm dying here. And, but if you're not going to be able to drink and you can't kill yourself and you're living in a camping trailer, you have no phone, no running water, and no television or radio, you will ask God to hold you because you got nothing else going for you. I could not get a date and I was willing to be of service. I was available. And I don't know if it was the plasma bandage or the fishing cap with the lure, but they were not knocking on the camper. And something happened and made me start taking the steps. And I just knew, something. I could feel something. I wasn't sure what it was. I thought it was a little bit like Twilight Zone, but you're alone. You're in a camping trip. Who cares? Nobody's going to see what you're doing secretly with God. So I did it. And the next thing you know, I'm taking those first 3 steps and something is happening to me. Not like the burning bush, but kind of close. It was like I came to. I just woke up and I looked around and I thought, I can do this. I can do this. I'm going to do this no matter what. I'm going to do this whether I have a job, whether I have the kids, whether I ever have a home again. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do it. And I had a sponsor for 25 years. She didn't play games. They were very mean where I got sober. They said things like, we don't nurture an inner child. We try to help you find the inner adult. That's the one that's missing. And when I got to my 4th column, all I could write down was, well, what did I do? what did I do showed up a lot, and she was helping me see. And by the time I got done with that, it was as thorough a thing as I've ever done. And I was like, oh my God. And I had a complete come apart. I wasn't relieved after my fifth step. And they kept going, there's more steps. There's more steps. Don't panic. And I thought, 6 and 7 better work or I'm gone. Because I can't be this way and sober. And 6 and 7 worked. 6 and 7 started changing me in a way that I didn't even think was possible. I didn't actually even want to build strong character. I kind of liked my character, which was a pretend person, which is pretty awesome, I got to tell you. The fake person is much more like Mother Teresa, kind of. You know, that's the fake person. Now I'm like a freak. The kids are coming home and Helen and Howard are bringing me sheets and towels. And Scotty brings over a little black and white TV for the kids. And Carl from the club brings me. I get into some ghetto apartment that's furnished for one bedroom furnished behind Bob's Big Boy with horrible furniture. And Carl brings me a car. He says, I brought you a car, honey. You've worked so hard here. I've been watching you. And it, come on out and see it. And I went out there, and it was a red Pinto. Now, you know how I feel about red Pintos. Ralph certainly knows. I don't like red Pintos. I don't actually like red cars. I don't want to offend anybody that's got a Pinto or a red car. But I don't know what the whole thing is here. But I thought, if people are going to give you a car, I'm holding out for a better one. So I told Carl, I can't take it. And I call my sponsor and I tell her, you will never believe. And Carl finally leaves with the car. And I told her, I said, I told him I couldn't take it. Another gift, God's gift in ugly wrapping paper. And she said the most profound thing to me. She goes, if anybody asks you if you have a sponsor, tell them yes. Don't tell them it's me. Ow. I mean, she just was so embarrassed by my existence, you know, like I thought she wanted me to be honest, you know, and she wanted me to be grateful, which it took me 3 days of driving that red Pinto to get grateful. And I'm picking up somebody new and I'm getting my kids to school. Jack Ladd had got me a job while the kids were gone making sandwiches in a deli. Minimum wage. I didn't even know what minimum wage was. I rode my bicycle there every day. I never missed a day of work. I made better financial and men's work and minimum wage than I did when I got back to healthcare. I was so focused. As I started going through 8 and 9, I'm telling you the truth. On step 8, it's not just about the list. It was about letting people off the hook. There's a whole forgiveness list there. And this is kind of how I am. If I hurt you or I offend you, I'm sorry. And I mean it. Get over it. But I'm human. I make a mistake. I'm sorry. And I meant it. Okay, let's move on. If you hurt me, you must pay for the rest of your natural life. And I will remind you that you hurt me. I just had honorary victim status somewhere in my world, and it did not serve me well. It's not spiritually empowering to stay stuck. And my sponsor was real big on, you know, most of this is going to be a forgiveness list, this part of your inventory. And the rest, I was willing to go clean things up. I was painstaking about it. Which means it's a pain in the neck, if you ask me. I didn't want to go pay. I had written a bad check for pizza one night on my supermom dinner from the bar for the children, right? I didn't have any money in the bank. Bad checks, no money, whatever. And that whatever bill, maybe $10 or $15, turns into some like national debt by the time. And I thought, I don't want to go pay that. But I did. I mean, I had to do all that. It took me 12 years to pay IRS. So So what? I was sober anyway. Just kept chipping away a little bit at a time. There were all these things happening. And I was able to go make a lot of these amends. And then I went to, my mom had died when I was young. And I kind of missed out on that. And my dad and I had issues, you know, and he just wasn't quite right. And he dropped off my sister when right after my mom died. She was 8 years old. I was 21 years old when my mom died. Here, she goes, he goes, this is too much for me. So we'd always had this thing. And I thought, it took me 5 years to do an inventory. And then finally I went, oh, my God, I finally got it. I had wanted him to remember when my birthday was. I knew his was sometime in October. I wanted him to accept me for who I was. I never accepted him for who he was. I didn't even know who he was. I really wasn't even that interested, to be honest with you. I wanted him to be interested in me. I didn't know who I was, but I wanted him to embrace this neurotic person. I was just like, oh my God, that poor guy. I book a ticket. I go to Houston, Texas. I'm going to ask Dad if we can have coffee. He's a strong old German guy and doesn't play emotional games, doesn't want to have all touchy-feely conversations. So I said, hey, I'm going to be in Houston. Do you want to have coffee? He says, absolutely. That'll be good. And he said, I can't come to the airport to pick. I'm not going to be able to pick you up at the airport. I said, I got it covered. I'll see you tomorrow. Interesting what God can do in 6 and 7 and 8 was I didn't need a ride. I didn't have anything tied up with him. I was just going to try to be a good daughter and make my amends. But I was able to hear him all the way through. And he says, I don't see as well as I used to. He probably said a whole bunch of stuff to me and I stopped it right here so I could be mistreated, ignored, whatever else I came up with. That wasn't what happened. I just didn't get it. And I said, oh, good. He says, I'd come get you, but I just can't see to drive that far. And right before I was going to go see him, my aunt, my mom's sister, they're all crazy in Texas. Sorry if you're from Texas, but I've been there. I was born there. And I'm telling my aunt my dramatic, because I'm 5 years sober now. I'm very dramatic, not like mellow now. And I'm saying all this stuff. And then my aunt says, well, honey, that's not even your real daddy. I said, what? She says, well, I thought you knew. You didn't know that? Well, I thought you knew. Well, anyway, you're Greek or Jewish. I never can remember which. I think it was a restaurant owner. Well, she goes, well, anyway, and she wants to tell her story. Excuse me, I'm not German. Hello? I didn't know what to do. That's an Oprah show. And I just sat there and I'm like, I didn't even know what to do with it. So I raced over to the Legacy Club outside of Pasadena and I go racing in like Kramer. And there's an old timer named Lois sitting there. She got sober the year I was born. And so I go racing in there. I said, I'm not German. And I came and I did this. And I'm trying to help her understand the gravity of this. I'm here to make amends. This isn't my, oh my God, what am I going to do? And she looked at me like I was on something. She says, honey, a daddy's a daddy. You came here to clean it up, clean it up. That's how much wisdom those people had. I stood there. I thought, well, she goes, a daddy's a daddy. Don't worry about it. I said, And she tells the group, the little California girl's got a problem. And let's just have a meeting on acceptance. So one old timer and 1 hour and one topic. And by the end of the meeting, daddy was a daddy and I came there to clean it up. And that was my dad. End of story. And I went and cleaned it up. I never told him I found out. There was no need to. That was my dad. That was the end of that. And I was able to become an incredible daughter. And he was an amazing man. I got to know. I thought, oh my God, this is me. I miss that because I was so driven by 100 forms of fear, self-pity, self-seeking, and self-delusion. That's my story. And that fixed it all. I mean, when I got back, I was different. I was different. I was a different, I looked at people different. I had a new employer. He provided what I needed if I kept close to him. I became a worker among workers most of the time. I became a friend among friends. My sponsor would sometimes mention that she sponsored me. That I thought would never happen. And I started raising those kids and I got lots of help. I thought, I won't need too much help. I was a Girl Scout leader, for God's sakes. You know, I've been around the block here at the mom. I could not have done a week without the help I got. There was somebody who picked him up after school because I went back into healthcare and I couldn't arrange the transportation. Somebody picked him up after school. Somebody helped at Christmas. I mean, there were so many things. I mean, my kids are in their 40s and their 50s today. I have 9 grandchildren. I have 10, just got number 10, great grandchild. 9 great grandsons, 1 great granddaughter. That's old. None of them have ever seen me pick up a drink. My oldest grandson will be 37. They think I'm a regular grandma. They think I'm fun. We've hiked Mount Spokane. I mean, we've gone dinosaur fossil hunting. I mean, we've done a million things in 38 years, and they think I've tried to honor them in everything I do. It's not about me. It's everything's about them. That's amazing to me that I turned into somebody that I have some respect for. When I tried to get a boyfriend and my sponsor would say very mean things to me. She says, honey, you're looking for Prince Charming. He's looking for a princess. You're not one. Ow. True, but ow. I mean, I had nothing going for me. I needed a boyfriend. I didn't want one. I needed one with a car and a MasterCard, preferably. And when I did fall in love here, on AA campus, it was with somebody with a few more years than me, and we were together till death do us part, and we had an awesome relationship. We both loved Alcoholics Anonymous. We loved to play cribbage. We loved to travel. It was an amazing experience, and when he died suddenly, he'd been up in L.A. talking one night and just died. He just died. He'd gotten a clean bill of health on Friday. On Sunday, he just was dead. And, you know, I got the call. His sponsor came and picked me up at 11 o'clock at night. We went to the hospital. There were already 30 people there. I don't even know how that worked. And I'd run into us. I think things are funny that everybody doesn't think it's funny. So if you don't think it's funny, call your sponsor after the meeting. But it's kind of funny. And so I was over at the mall that day because Don went through slippers like there was no tomorrow. And I go and I'm spending the national debt on a pair of slippers that are going to last him for the rest of his life. Obviously, they would have. But I ran into a sponsor. A sponsor says, what are you doing? He says, what are you doing in Nordstrom's? I said, I'm spending as much money as it takes to get him slippers that'll last. I said, he's going to die if he ever finds out how much they cost. Okay, now a sponsor and I are sitting at my dining room table right here, 2:30, 3:30 in the morning. We're both kind of teary, and then we're shocked, and then we kind of smile, and then we're in shock, and then we're sad, and it was just, everybody had left. It was just he and I, and he looks up, and he says, why, you think somebody told him? I said, told him what? He said, how much the slippers cost, because he's definitely dead. I mean, that's funny. I'm sorry, but it was funny. I start laughing. And as soon as I started laughing, I thought, I know God will put me in balance. I know you guys will hold me together. I know Humpty Dumpty got put back together on June 30th, 1982. You've never stopped. When I've done, I've had money here, I've had no money. I've had him, I've had no him. Had a cat, got eaten by a coyote. I mean, it's just, you know, stuff happens. And yet, the thing that's steady is I don't believe my own press. I don't believe it. I check with you. My license plate reads, I love Rule 62 for a reason. I'm passionate about Alcoholics Anonymous. I still have service commitments. I still do H&I. I am typically house full of people. I have a living room group of women that have, it's a 12 and 12 meeting. We're having our 25th anniversary next month. 25 years in my living room. Now we're on Zoom. So we're probably going to have our 25 year anniversary August 1st on Zoom. Who knows? But I'll tell you, just having a birthday Tuesday and having them go to all that trouble just for me to have a birthday party and sing me happy birthday and make a big deal out of it. You know, it's was kind of freaky, actually. It almost sounded like a memorial, which I've chosen not to have because it was like, God, they put you on a pedestal one day a year, your birthday. You're a saint. They're so lucky to have you. They don't always feel that way about me, just so you know. But on your birthday, you're the second coming, right? I've been lucky. Lucky for me is God's grace. I've gotten lots of gifts and ugly wrapping paper that made me the woman I am today. I'm a little eccentric. I think I'm interesting. I crack up all by myself. And yet I can start crying when I'm reading the big book with somebody because it still matters to me. It doesn't matter. I mean, it's good that I'm 38 years sober. Don't get me wrong. I think that's kind of cool. It's a long time and I haven't taken a break or anything, but that I care this much. I never thought I'd be this excited to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous in good standing. And I still have that. So the service commitments, the sponsorship, the steps, the traditions, every single thing that you can do here, do it. And every single step will turn you into somebody who you would never want to leave. Thanks. I'm done. Thanks, Carl.